And good morning. We'll call this Earthwatch of the Wolf. My name's Jim Freund. I'm filling in for Robert Knight, and then, well, filling in for myself, where I normally come on at 1:30. And we are going to listen to some music and perhaps some stories and a lecture by Margot Adler on why we love vampires. This will be fun. Stay tuned.
Halloween.
Yes, I brought that wolf howl with me. Good morning and welcome to at least a few hours, we hope, of fun here on WBAI in New York. I call it Samhain. I mean, there are so many names for this holiday. And there was a time when you didn't have the Halloween season. And there are certainly places in these United States where Halloween is considered a verboten kind of thing. It is associated, you know, with witches and therefore anti-Christian and all this. But it is a holiday that dates to the Oldens. And the Oldens, which we now refer to as the Wiccans and their predecessors, were all of a different thought. All of their holidays have been more or less supplanted. Yule and Yuletide, which itself has many different traditions, has been turned into Christmas. And, you know, the May Day festivals and all that were sort of, I'm not quite sure if Easter is exactly put in there, but that was also, of course, the pagan New Year. So there are all these things that have sort of supplanted the old holidays. But Halloween has been there. Samhain, I should say, which is spelt, by the way, S-A-M-H-A-I-N, for those not looking at the subtitling on your radio. Samhain has been there for, well, these many years. Of course, a lot of these holidays are based on agriculture and harvests and things like that. But this is one that finally has become accepted. Why? Well, they discovered they can sell costumes, they can sell cupcakes, they can sell commercials, and all of a sudden, because of the commercialization, the great religion, that of money, has legitimatized Halloween so that on all the various TV channels, you know, tonight and earlier this week, and certainly through the next week and a half, you're going to be getting all kinds of Halloween specials where we're going to be no different, and we're going to try to tie it to money a little bit as well. Yes, in this thon, when we are doing our return to WBAI ideas, I am going to try to return to one of the things that, for me, WBAI has always represented. I started volunteering here in 1967 as a phone volunteer. I became more of a regular additive, as it were, over the next couple of years, and actually working outside of the fundraising drives called marathons for, well, obvious reasons. And in those years, we only had them once a year, and they were in May. They started May 1st. So I date my beginnings at WBAI on May 1st, 1967, although I was already listening for about 2 years. I was 13 years old, by the way, when I began answering phones here. And what drew me to WBAI? Well, it wasn't all of the progressive/radical programming, although it was fun. And there was a lot of other programming, certainly not progressive at all as well. There was a show called Let Freedom Ring, which was about as right-wing as you could get. Of course, we were laughing heartily at it. And of course, we were, shall we say, altered consciousness when we were listening to it. But that's okay, because we followed it with other things. That's the idea behind open radio, community radio, is that there's more than one sound to it. But one of the things that was always there, darn it, was fun. We had so much radio drama. We had so much joy, really, within the station. I mean, were there arguments? Were there troubles? Ha, ha, ha! Yes, they weren't that much less than they are today. There has always been that. And we have often, over these 40-plus years that I have been working here, teetering on edges of doom, and destruction. However, a lot of that was often WBAI itself. We were sort of left alone, Pacifica being a very West Coast kind of an entity. And here, it's not so much, you know, the West Coast is like, oh, there's New York. Ooh, hello. Oh, yes. Thank you so much. And say what, Kenita? And Tally person Kenita, who is, you know, I'm going to be your server tonight. Kenita is our Tally person. And we have answering the phones, by the way, Floyd Dupre, Michael Maddox. So we have three people, but that's cool. That's good. So you see, we are going to do what they all do. We are going to turn Samhain Halloween into a money thing, but we're going to have fun doing it, right? Right. Exactly. We're not going to pull teeth. We're not going to sell bizarre things. What we're going to sell two things. We're going to have premiums, okay? Three things that we're going to sell. Make it four. Number one will be the fourth. Just become a subscriber to WBAI. If you're not a subscriber to WBAI, why not? The concept of listener-sponsored radio is a treasured one, and it is what separates us from other radio stations and TV stations that ask for your money. We are truly listener-sponsored. Our budget is well over 85% of listener sponsorship. I don't know the exact number. It could even be over 90%. We have minor grants here and there, and they tend to be capital grants and things like, you know, helping for pay for the music that we play on the air and internet and stuff like that. So, become a subscriber. It's $25 a year. That's nothing. You do the math. I'm not going to break it down. I'm not going to get out my calculator and say, that's only umpteen cents a day. But you know what? It's only umpteen cents a day. It's less than umpteen cents a day. So, number one, become a subscriber. $10. Oh, you're already a fan of WBAI. You believe in WBAI. If I were Robert, I'd be, you know, thumping it. You believe in WBAI. Well, become a WBAI buddy. I'm sorry. It's a BAI buddy, not a WBAI buddy. You know, I realize that we have this very nice new logo, okay? And we have for the BAI buddy poster here, we have a picture of a man and a woman with a thing and headphones on their head. And oh my God, do they look like Cybermen. They really, really do. So, you know, so also if you're a fan of Cybermen, if you know what Cybermen are, well, become a BAI buddy. And there's lots of reasons to do this. Now, the idea behind BAI buddies is simple. You give us a minimum of $10 a month. That's it. That's the idea. It's, you know, if we were being more corporate about it, we would call it like something like a sustaining membership. And what this is going to do is it's going to, and this is a major, major goal of all these fundraising drives, is to cut down the fundraising drives, cut down the number of on-air fund drive days. Okay. So. BAI buddy helps that a great deal. Number two, get the new WBAI tote grocery bag. I haven't seen that one yet. Number three, become eligible for on-air giveaways. Ooh. I'm not yet aware of what those are, but I can probably help get items for the giveaways. I'll have to talk to Andrea about that. Four, get to participate in the member perks discount program at local shops and museums. We used to do that, and we're starting to do it again, and it's about time. And in fact, I run an event, and I will offer WBAI a discount to that event. And get discounted or free entry to WBAI WBAI live events, which is good because there's no reason to get a discount for one of our recorded events, and automatically become a voting member of WBAI. And that's very important that you actually get to vote, not on the programs. No, I'm sorry. You don't get to vote me off the air, but you do get to vote for the board members, for the listener board members, people from the community that will have their say. So that was only number two, is to become a BAI buddy. And you know what? If you call 212-209-2950, one of the people I mentioned before can help explain it to you. Between Floyd, Michael, and Kenita, they will help explain it to you because they probably know more about it than I. Okay, I said there were four things I was pushing. Oh, yes, we do have two premiums. Yeah, I mentioned that we have this WBAI logo. I have friends who work here at WBAI, and look at that. And oh, my God, that looks corporate, doesn't it? Well, it looks attractive. It uses Helvetica letters. I like it. So get a T-shirt. Get a T-shirt. They're nice. They're cool. They're spiffy. They're expensive. I mean, they're, well, put it this way. You get a T-shirt when you donate $60, okay? This is gifting. Both of our premiums here are about gifting. The idea is you give us $60, and we, out of the goodness of our hearts, thank you by sending you a T-shirt. Or, and here's number four, or the two CD set that Max Schmid put together. Ooh, I'm stealing somebody else's premium. That Max Schmid put together of Ray Bradbury radio dramas, which includes a half-hour interview that I did with Bradbury, which I'm not going to broadcast this morning. We broadcasted last Fun Drive, and it did very well. But Max, Paul Wonders started this project, like 25 years ago, in which he was collecting all these different Bradbury radio dramas and put together The Martian Chronicles and things like that. And Max has added to it over the years and, you know, improved the quality. And I have added to it with a couple of minor things. And Bradbury was a person who appeared on Pacifica every so often. And he's in the news again, even after his passing earlier this year at age 91. Bradbury is in the news. Because if you have seen this movie Argo, and if you have not, I urge you to go see it. It is a lot of fun, and it is 80% a true story. It really is. I'm reading the factual book right now. Of course, you know, names are changed. A lot of it is about, secret agents and spies, and so you don't divulge everything in there. But Ray Bradbury is involved. So is Roger Zelazny. Okay, because you've heard of this movie probably, and you know that they made a movie. They were faking a movie in order to get some diplomats out of Iran in 1980 after the November 4th takeover of the embassy by so-called student protesters. They weren't students. In 1979, in the Carter era. And there were six people that were left elsewhere, and so between the Canadian consulate, or Canadian embassy, rather, and the CIA, and the guy who did all the special effects in Hollywood. I mean, this guy did the masks for Planet of the Apes. He did all, you watch Mission Impossible, they would pull it off. This guy, John Chambers, was the guy who designed those. He put the ears on Spock, all right? So they came up with the idea. I'm giving you no spoilers here. It's all in the advertising. They came up with the idea of pretending that these six people were Canadians filming a movie. Now, in the movie is just called Argo, which is based on a joke that the special effects guy had come up with, which was basically Argo bleep yourself. It wasn't bleep. And all that, but they had a script. They had a real thing. In the movie, it's just this, you know, whatever bad sci-fi film starring, among other people, Adrian Barbeau and a few recognizable people, a football player and all that, are actually in the movie. But in real life, I was going to bring this back to Ray Bradbury, there was a screenplay based on Roger Zelazny's Lord of Light, which is one of my favorite novels, and I really wish somebody would make a good movie out of it. Now that we have CGI, taking a look at what they did with John Carter, boy, could they do a great live-action Lord of Light, okay? But this is 1979. They were going to do a crappy Lord of Light. But that was it. Bradbury had worked on a screenplay. It was floating around Hollywood. Apparently, something about he had absconded with money that was going to make this movie from. And the special effects guy was aware of it. So they hired Jack Kirby, the great Jack Kirby of Marvel Comics, co-creator of, you know, you name it. He did it, and that includes all the Avengers and all that stuff. Jack Kirby, the great Jack Kirby, created storyboards for all of this. So this is, again, Ray Bradbury in the news. And this is, again, a reason for you to subscribe to WBAI, because one of the premiums we have is this amazing CD that Max has put together with, I don't even remember the number. It's well over 40 hours of radio drama, okay? So, again, we're going to do this deal. 40 hours of radio drama, half an hour of the interview I did. And, you know, we will return that to you as a thank you gift if you donate $60 to WBAI, right? So, again, you're spending what? You know, $1.07 or something for it? Okay, but here's the deal. I'm here to do a fun Halloween show. I am here to do a mix. I have all this material, and I have also with me, that's a short story by Theodore Sturgeon. Here's the deal on that. Here's a premium for you. It's a collective premium. It's group sourcing this premium. If we get by 1:30, it's now 12:26, by 1:30, if we get $1,000 in pledges, I will read this short story, which is sort of a traditional story for me to read on the air. It's called Shuttle Bop by Theodore Sturgeon, and it is a perfect story for Samhain. It's a comedy story with an interesting twist at the end. It takes about, well, it'll take about 70 to 80 minutes to read. It would be a major feature. So I'm putting that at $1,000. Now, that $1,000, that can be, you know, that doesn't have to be on its own. If we move a number of other premiums and straight donations and stuff like that, as long as we make $1,000 by 1:30, by the end of Earthwatch, I will then spend the Hour of the Wolf time reading you that story. So that is, I guess, the fifth premium. So it's, but I want to get to some of the music. I have, oh my God, do I have stuff that I have accumulated over the years. And we have a very, very special treat for you. Margot Adler, who created Hour of the Wolf and was the WBAI news director and is now a correspondent for some place called NPR, where she's one of the producers of All Things, I forget the name of it, in Morning Edition. It's some show they've got. But she was a BAI person for many, many years and still an excellent friend of WBAI. Margot has gone on, as she is wont to do, a very strange and special kick, or kink, maybe. She's been into this vampire thing. She has read, at this point, more than 250 vampire novels in a row. She's writing a book about it, by the way. In fact, I think we're into the past tense. I don't know when it's coming out, but so last Sunday at the All Souls Church on the Upper West Side, she gave this lecture, a shortened version of which she gave on Hour of the Wolf last year. a lecture on why we love vampires. This is about 20 minutes long. It is funny. It is fascinating. It is filled with all kinds of things. I promise you I will play that. But with all the music we got, with that thing, with the Ted Sturgeon story, we have hours and hours and hours of material. And you know what? We're not going near any of that until we make a little money at least. Yes, yes, it's the old hold the show for ransom routine. But there are so many good reasons to do it. And also because I'm not selling anything but WBAI itself and the concept of keep this darned thing alive. We have a new program director. Changes are afoot. Changes are afoot. It's a Baird Searles thing is what it is. I sort of hear that in the back of my head, and it's his amazing voice. And that was from the Tolkien thing that we did, the Council of Elrond. I should play that at some time again, before The Hobbit comes out. Have to talk to Robert about that. Margot Adler, Dave Marks, and myself produced one chapter of Lord of the Rings with the professor's permission, with Professor Tolkien's permission. I actually got to get on the phone with Tolkien and ask him, you know, for like 30 seconds and ask him about a pronunciation and stuff. It was a thrill then and even more so now. So anyway, we have so much material and I need to have a good conscience about it. I know that there's a lot of people listening right now because I know how many people tune in for Robert Knight's show. I know how many people are listening to Earthwatch and are tuning in to WBAI for our thoughts on elections and the politics of the day and the unique programming that WBAI has, okay? But we have to survive in order to do that. And I want to do it with fun. I don't want to berate you. I don't want to, you know, sell various things other than us. Okay? So that's the pitch. That's the idea. And we need your call. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. And as mentioned, Floyd, Michael, and Kenita are standing by, ready to take your calls. You can pledge as low as $10, as long as you give that $10 monthly, or you can pledge $25 and become a full voting member of WBAI, a full subscriber. And for $60, we have the WBAI t-shirt in various sizes, and we also have that Ray Bradbury CD. Okay, but the important thing is twofold. A, to keep WBAI alive, to get this marathon onto, as we're going into the final stretch of it, to get us into some kind of solvency and prove from me to the powers that be that speculative fiction, science fiction, fantasy, and all that is in an alternative form is something that you are interested in. B, that BAI proves to Pacifica that we are a flagship station and valued and making our budget. That would be unique. And C, we have to pay our bills. 212-209-2950. At this moment, no calls are coming in. And what you were hearing before, alas, I'm sorry to say, I don't feel good about hearing phone calls on recorded programs. I mean, yes, they were coming in, and yes, that's good. But right now, this is live. Right now, it is 12:33 in New York City, and we are waiting to hear your call. We are waiting to hear those phones ring at 212-209-2950. And as soon as we do, I'm going to start going into that music mix with all the fun Samhain, Halloween, All Hallows Eve, All Souls Day stuff. that we have lined up for you, including that lecture, and if we make $1,000, including that story by Ted Sturgeon, 212, who I met, by the way, at WBAI in 1967. We were and are an important place for people to congregate. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Give us a call. Give us a pledge now, and we will truly appreciate it. And I suspect we have something else for you, but I am going to find out what that is. Oh, I see. Yes. I see. That's what makes the noise. Right? A Halloween spirit has come into the room. It's this pot over here? Okay, very good. Yeah, we do have pots in Master Control. But they're potentiometers. Yeah. And pipes, but they're for bringing in heat and cooling. 212-209-2950. We need to get the ball rolling. We need to hear those phones ring, which Sydney just, our friendly spirit has just enabled. And we need to start bringing in some money. When I, when I called and asked, is my show on the air this week? And Chris Hatzis, our new program director, said, yes. Yes, it is. I was thinking, you know, at 1:30 a.m., I'm not going to pitch hard. I'm not going to do that. It doesn't raise a lot of money, and I'd rather just give people programming. But at midnight, because he called me back and he said, you know, Robert is really overworking. He has really been doing so much for the station. We would appreciate it if you could help cover. And so here I am. But at this hour, I cannot, with a clear conscience, just do a show. I cannot just do that. But I don't want to be doing this rap right now. I don't want to be doing this pitch. I want to be raising money and playing fun sounds for you to enjoy and for all of us to get together. Hell, I could do a Tam Lin mix for an hour. I have like 40 versions of the song Tam Lin, an amazing tune. And of course, there's Matty Groves, there's Alison Gross, there are all the Halloween Tales of Fairy, and a couple of fun ghostly-like things from everybody from David Bowie on. And of course, a lecture from Margot. And possibly a story from Theodore Sturgeon. But we got to get those phone calls, and we've got to raise money now. We need to survive here. And survival isn't a very important thing. And at this hour of the night, because this is still sort of primetime radio, this is when Long John Nebel used to be on the air, if you're old enough to know who that is. And if you're not, well, this is when Robert Knight is on the air, okay? This is a good time for listeners to be tuning in, and I know that you are tuning in, and I know that you don't want to be hearing me harangue you like, you know, some infomercial or something like that only on the radio. I know that you'd rather hear fun stuff, and I will give that to you as soon as you call and pledge your support for listener-sponsored radio. 212-209-2950. Who will be the first person? The first person to get the ball rolling and help us get into programming rather than simply haranguing. As I said, this is a form of ransom. This is a, is it pay to play? Yeah, sort of. You pay, I'll play. That's what it comes down to, and you'll enjoy what I play. I promise you'll enjoy it a whole lot more than me begging you for money. 212-209-2950. Can we at least get a first phone call with a mere $25 pledge to WBAI, or a $60 pledge in order to take advantage of one of the two fabulous premiums that we have for you? There's the WBAI t-shirt, which is actually very attractive. If you go to WBAI.org, my God, that's loud. How do I lower that volume? If you go to WBAI.org right now, you can see the t-shirt and you will enjoy it. I promise you'll enjoy it. Okay, it looks like that called, you know, it was just a ring, but it wasn't a pledge. It's not on the phone anymore. I'm going to have to figure out where that volume thingy is. 212-209-2950. And yes, I have eyes in the back of my monitor, and I can tell the difference between just a call coming in and somebody pledging. 212-209-2950. Let's get that first pledge going. We have three people standing by. They are giving of their time. We're very grateful for that. And we're grateful for you when you make that call. Make that call now. 212-209-2950. It is so important. This radio station is so important. And we are thinking up new ideas. We're talking collectively to our program director about new directions that we can take, things that we can do, things to bring listeners back to WBAI. I had an event last night at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, and a couple of people showed up. A friend of ours, including a friend of WBAI's, Danny Lieberman, had passed away, and friends of his showed up there. And at one point after the event, we all go out and have food and victuals after the event. And the topic of WBAI came up. They looked embarrassed and said, "Yeah, I was a listener." I said, "Oh, how long ago?" "Oh, I don't remember." And that is sadly the case. That is sadly the state of affairs for so many people. And so the theme of this fund drive is come back. Now, if you're not listening now, yeah, obviously you can't just come back because, well, it's, you know, it's metaphysically absurd, man. But, if enough people are listening now, if enough people are pledging by calling 212-209-2950, then the word will spread. It will become, as we say nowadays, viral. And it would be a lovely thing for WBAI and listenership to WBAI to become a viral thing, that people will say, "Did you hear that? That was so good. That was so interesting. That was so whatever." And that's what we want to do, and that's what we need to do. But we have to survive in order to be able to do it. And in order for us to survive, and this is the thing about listener-sponsored radio, you have to call 212-209-2950 and pledge. So please do that at this time. Now, mind you, I have not come in with, "Oh my, this is, you know, a special premium." I talk to the powers that be here, they say, "Oh, what are you pitching?" I'm pitching the radio station, is my answer. And they're going, But that's it. I, after having volunteered here for 40 plus years, I am well aware of the value of WBAI. And if you listen to us, whatever it may be, if it's for arts programming, which is what I'm the big fan of, the political programming and all that, then you know the value of WBAI. And you will be like that person that we hear clanging in the background, calling WBAI and pledging. 212-209-2950. And now I do not see that call staying. So, yeah, make it real. Make it real. I mean, yeah, you can give money to the phone company by calling, but it would be better, wouldn't it, to give money to listener-sponsored radio? You have a choice. 212-209-2950. Make that call now. Make a pledge now. And, you know, even if the phone rings, it's not just that. I can also see how much people have pledged after they make their pledge. $25 will make you a subscriber to WBAI. $10 a month will make you a BAI buddy and has all kinds of benefits associated with it, and is really one of the best things that you can do for the radio station and yourself. And a $60 donation will bring you this Ray Bradbury 2-CD set of hours and hours and hours of radio dramas and interviews that Max Schmid has put together, that I contributed a little bit to myself. That the wonderful Paul Wonder began the piece of the Martian Chronicles in there. But But it all comes down to getting the ball rolling. And usually the way it works is that one person calls, one person pledges, and the gates open up. Then things start moving, okay? Then things start moving. So we need a call that's more than just a phone ringing. We need a call that is somebody pledging money on the air, on the phone, not on the air, but to keep us on the air. And... well, that's it. So I have this wonderful show. I came in to do this wonderful show, but we're more or less holding it for ransom. We're here till 3 a.m. I've got time. And this is the primetime part of the show. And this is why I'm pitching now. Now, by now, we would have already been hearing Margot Adler's piece. We would have been hearing all this wonderful stuff if the pledges were coming in. So let's begin with those pledges. 212-209-2950 to call and pledge and keep WBAI solvent to keep us on the air. 212-209-2950. I'm going to throw water over the person who is calling just to hear the phone ring by simply, well, taking that off the air. If calls are coming in and they are real, I will bring that pot back up and then you'll all be able to hear it. But if you're just calling to hear yourself, well, you're not going to be able to hear yourself anymore. I've doused that. Let's get a pledge. Let's get some phone calls. And my God, we could even take calls. We could be talking. We could be doing all these kinds of things. We could be sharing what it is that WBAI has, this listener community. It's very interesting to watch what is going on with new media and the internet and all that. And there are all these people, oh, radio is dead, and people have their internet stations and the podcasting. And no, that's not all of it. That is, in fact, the kind of stuff that is enhancing radio. There are apps on all the various platforms, like TuneIn Radio and other ways that through your mobile phone you can listen to WBAI. People all around the world can now be listening to WBAI. And by the way, yes, we would very much welcome out-of-country pledges. No reason we can't get those. We know that we have listeners from all over the world. Please join in with our New York constituency and pledge. But do it now. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I'm getting to a point where I'm going to have to take a break. And in order to do that, well, again, I need that clear conscience. I need to know that some money is coming in. It's now 12:46, and you know, we started with like 5-10 minutes of music there. But now, at this time, we need to be raising some funds. We need to know that WBAI will continue. I mean, we will get to some programming. We'll get to some music and stuff. But we will do it. How early we do it, when we do it, that's up to you. That's up to calling and pledging. And I am so saddened to see how long it is taking people to do it. Because here's the thing. I know it's going to happen. I know that people always come through. It's just a question of how many teeth do we have to pull in order to make it go? But at this hour, we're going to get calls. We're going to hear from you. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Let's get our first pledge now, please. 212-209-2950. And we are, you see, I can't tell if that's an actual call. No. I think, oh, wait, maybe it is. 212-209-2950. The floodgates may have opened. That may be calls actually coming in. And if so, I will again open the sound. Yes, it looks like we're actually getting a pledge. Oh, my. Thank you so much. Okay, the floodgates are opened. Now let's get another pledge. 212-209-2950 is the call number to call to make a pledge to WBAI. $25 will make you a subscriber. $10 a month will get you started on your road to BAI buddydom. And $60 will get you a gift from WBAI, either the Ray Bradbury 2-CD set of hours and hours and hours, scores of hours, because it is over 40 hours of radio drama based on Ray Bradbury, plus interview and ancillary materials of Bradbury's, or a T-shirt. And the T-shirts are cool. The T-shirts are nice. They make a statement and they further the mission of saying that you're somebody who supports WBAI. Right now, one person is calling. Please, let's get a second pledge coming in. 212-209-2950. As soon as a few pledges come in, we will move on to some music and some materials and enjoy the season that is Samhain. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. 212-209-2950. This is what it always comes down to. It always comes down to giving the phone number. It always comes down to saying, please call now. Please make that pledge. And there's so many ways, by the way, that we can go with a Samhain show. There's comedy. There's that short story by Ted Sturgeon. There's... as mentioned, this lecture from Margot Adler. I have a lot of stuff planned for you. Now, how much of that will be in prime time and how much of that will be in the wee hours? Well, that's, you know, part of it. But right now, one person is calling, one person is giving of their heart and wallet to make sure that this can happen. Let's get somebody else to join that one person. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Again, $60 will get you the 2-CD set of the Ray Bradbury premium. $60 will also, you also have a choice. You don't get both. You have a choice of that or of the WBAI T-shirt. Then $25, a mere $25 a year, makes you a subscriber to WBAI and a person who can vote in the elections. Too late to vote for this year, but you can start voting for next year's listener members of our board. There are staff members and listener members, and, well, you'll be hearing all about that as we get to that time. And $10 a month makes you a BAI buddy. It's a ongoing aid that has all kinds of benefits associated with it. And to find out more about that, give us a call. You might end up talking to Floyd, Michael, or Kenita, but give us a call now. 212-209-2950. The phone lines are clear again, and with any luck, we will see a tally change fairly shortly. And once we do, I'll feel a little better. But to say that I was pitching for 45 minutes and all we made was like, $25 isn't the ideal number. I was looking more for like $1,000 so that I could read you that Sturgeon story as promised. But let's at least get something going in so that I can start actually doing a program instead of just, this pitching. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. $25 to become a subscriber, $10 a month to become a BAI buddy, $60 for your choice of a T-shirt or the Ray Bradbury 2-CD premium as put together by Max Schmid from the Golden Age of Radio, or Mass Backwards. He'll lay claim to either program for this, but it's a wonderful thing that he has done there and includes an interview that I did with Bradbury about 10 years ago. 212-209-2950. No tally change yet. So it's possible that was an informational call, or we're simply, making it clearer to write, or they're simply what we call tally lag, that it takes a while sometimes for the pledge to go over to Kenita, who's personing the tally calculator and before it actually gets put into the machine. 212-209-2950, because we do need more than one pledge, after all. I mean, if we end up getting $25 in the hour, that means that we really haven't paid for the electricity between this and the transmitter room and Empire State and everything else. It costs a lot of money to run a radio station in New York City, and WBAI has been here since 1960, providing alternative programming. If you want to get a good idea of what some of that is about, by the way, go see the movie Radio Unnameable, playing at Film Forum, and there's a special showing on Friday where Bob Fast will be making an appearance with some friends from WFMU, a station where he was for about 4 years, and also a great listener-sponsored station. Oops, should I have said that? Yes, I should. 212-209-2950, because after all, you can afford to subscribe to both, right? But right now, it's us. Right now, you're listening to us. Right now, you're going to call us and pledge, right? 212-209-2950 is the number to call and pledge. 212-209-2950. Still nothing on the tally, and I am getting a little disgruntled. I came in gruntled, but now I'm dissing it. So it's like, okay, you're going to be that way? Well, I could play horror programming. Oh, wait, it's a Halloween show. I'm going to play horror programming. Or I could be playing things that are a bit more fairy-oriented. But I think we're going to do a little bit of both, because I do have a hankering to hear at least one version of Tamlin and Alison Gross. I used to only play the Fairport Convention version of Tamlin, but since then I also discovered the Bill Jones version, and that is a woman, and she is absolutely amazing, and I think I'll play that one first when we start getting to the music mix for our Halloween morning. And that's what I think we're going to do. We'll do Bill Jones' Tale of Tamlin, then Steel I Span with Alison Gross, and then the Fairport Convention Tamlin. And that right there, that's about 15 minutes of music, because some of those are long cuts, but boy, are they worth listening to. And then we will go to the lecture by Margot Adler. But we have got to see a change in the tally. It is 12:55 in the morning. I know there are people all over the United States and other parts who are listening through the internet, if not right here in New York City. And we're available around the world at WBAI.org. So given all that, surely the out-of-towners ought to be pledging. You know, even if we have squeezed the turnip of listeners in the New York City area, which I know we haven't, dry, even if we've squeezed that turnip dry, I know we have people tuning in for Robert Knight, and frankly, who tune in for me as well, to listen to this station. I'm well aware of a number of people in California who tune in who probably do not subscribe, and it's really time that you do that. I appreciate the fact that you listen to Hour of the Wolf, which is a unique program. There are a couple of other science fiction programs in the country, and please take note. They are all at listener-sponsored stations. There is something about the nature of listener sponsorship that opens up people's thinking mode, that allows people to think in alternate ways, the kind of ways that good, fun, speculative fiction allows you to do so. It's a fascinating thing that, you know, on TV you get, usually dumbed-down programming or fun stuff and entertaining stuff like the wonderful show Doctor Who and various things like that. But it is on radio that we find the broadcast equivalent of things like audiobooks, interviews with writers, and things like that. There are a few great podcasts like SF Signal and all that. But we do that here. We've been doing that here for 40 years. And before I was doing it, Baird Searles was doing it. When I came here, on our staff were Samuel R. Delaney, Joanna Russ, Theodore Sturgeon, Thomas M. Dish. Baird Searles, our drama and literature director, who corralled all these people together. Now, wouldn't it be nice to have a WBAI where we get an arts department back, where we get a paid arts director back? And then wouldn't it be nice to split that job into music department and DNL, drama and literature, the way it should be, so that we can be bringing you that programming in such a manner? We need to change the economics of WBAI in order to do that. We need to be able to keep listener-sponsored radio supported in order to bring you the fun and the provocative thinking, or evocative thinking as the case may be, that we can provide you. 212-209-2950 is the way to get that started. Yes, we did get that one phone call, and it was there for a while, but I'm afraid that wasn't a pledge. Indication would be that it wasn't a pledge. And we are nearing 1 o'clock. We're very, very close to 1 o'clock here in New York City. And I'm not going to say I'm despondent. I'm just getting PO'd. I'm getting PO'd. You know, so I can just sit here and say, yeah, all right. Yeah, why should I be giving you programming if you're not calling and all that? But I don't want to go that route. That way lies despair. Despair. But we're not going to do that. We're going to enjoy ourselves. We're going to have fun. Let me see, by the way, searching through the hard drive I brought. It's one of the wonderful things is that I have so many ways of bringing things with me, although I've got to say, okay, enter key. Okay, let's see. That is close to what I was thinking of, but not right. I was looking for the name Bill Murray, who did a satire on WBAI pitching. But I came up with all these old songs by the great Billy Murray, mostly from about 1908. I kid you not, 105-year-old music. And we have a lot of old Halloween music that we could be playing. There's just so many different directions we could go, and I would go, as it were, where people would tell me, but please, only in the most positive manner, if we started getting pledges. But we need those pledges. We need your support. We need your help. 212-209-2950 is the way that we need to do it. It's the way that we need to survive. 212-209-2950. Okay, now I'm going to click yes, finish searching, because it's just not coming up offhand. Let's get those calls. Let's get those pledges. 212-209-2950. As I said, I know generally people will come through. They usually do for WBAI. But it's a question of what does it take? And I'm not quite sure now. We've given you any number of incentives. It's now after 1 a.m., so maybe it's time to move back a bit and, as I would say in football, punt. Let's start with some of the music and some of the festivities that we would enjoy. And then we'll come back assuming that we can get at least a pledge or two, we'll listen to that piece from Margot Adler. But right now, we're going to do the aforementioned mix that begins with Bill Jones doing The Tale of Tam Lin.
Travel down to Carterhaugh If young Tamlin is there, then let's go by Carterhaugh. But they leave him a pledge, either their mantles of green, or else their maidenhead. Janet tied her kirtle green, a bit above her knee, and she's gone straight to Carterhaugh as fast as go can she. She doth pull up the double rose, but only two, and then up came young Tamlin, says, "Lady, pull no more." And why you come to Carterhaugh without command from me? I'll come and go, young Janet said, and ask no leave of thee. Then of spoke her father dear, and he spoke meek and mild. "Well, alas, Janet," he said, "I think you go with child." "Well, if that be so," Janet said, "myself shall bear the blame. There's not a knight in all your halls shall get the baby's name. Oh, tell to me, Tamlin," she said, "why came you here to dwell? The Queen of Fairies caught me when from my horse I fell. But tonight it is Halloween, and the fairy court is right. Those that would let true love win, miles cross they must hide. First let pass the horses black, and then let pass the brown. Quickly run to the white steed and pull the rider down." "They will turn me in your arms to a newt or to a snake. Hold me tight and fear not, I'm the father of your babe." "And they'll turn me in your arms into a lion bold. Hold me tight and fear
fridge in the north country has christened me Bob, and day after her bower, and many a fair speech she made to me. She's stroked my head and she's combed my hair. She set me down softly on her knee, saying, if you will be my lover so true, so many good things I would give to you. Away, away, you ugly witch, go far away and let me be. I never will be your lover so true, and I wish I were out of your company. Alison Gross, she must be the ugliest witch in the North Country. Alison Gross, she must be the ugliest witch in the North Country.
Well, some calls are coming in now, and as long as calls come in, I will keep the music going. 212-209-2950.
She showed me a shirt of the softest silk, well wrought with pearls about the band, saying, if you will be my lover so true, this goodly gift you shall command. Alison Gross, she must be the ugliest witch in the North Country. Alison Gross, she must be the ugliest witch in.
To health, to thee, to me. Hey, we to the other world, boys.
Hey, we to the other world, boys. Where to the man in the moon drinks claret? Hey, we to the other world, boys. Where to the man in the moon drinks claret? Hey, we to the other world, boys. Where to the man in the moon drinks claret?
Thank you.
And that last band there was Piawackett. From an album, actually, that was given to me by Ellen Kushner. Thanks for that, Ellen. We're going to be hearing more from her and her partner, Delia Sherman, later in the year. Well, we have actually gotten a pledge, possibly two, and I was on the phone with somebody who pledged, and we were talking about the roots of neo-paganism, but while I'm forgetting half of what I ever knew, so I refer all people to find out more about neo-paganism. Start with what is probably the definitive book. Ex-WBAI staffer and still somebody who entertains us at WBAI, Margot Adler. That's M-A-R-G-O-T Adler. And Drawing Down the Moon, it came out the late 70s, early 80s. And is a bona fide serious study of the craft, or neo-paganism, or Wicca, or and then that breaks down into the Gardnerians and all that. That is probably the first book that one should read to learn more about this and about the various holidays. But Samhain, S-A-M-H-A-I-N, is the one that has become the most celebrated and one that has not really been co-opted by Judeo-Christian religions. It somehow stands on its own. There are those who want to make it sort of secular so that it takes away the pagan aspects of it. And there are those who want to be very aware that this is a pagan religion, darn it. And I just think, you know what, it's fun. It brings forth great mythologies and great stories. And so that is why we celebrate it. So the music and the stories we're playing today relate to that in one way or the other. And I am now going to play you, as promised, a sermon. That was given by Margot Adler, the aforementioned Margot Adler, just this past Sunday. And I am, do I have a browser open here somewhere? I thought I asked for, yes, there we go. I have to log in, and once I do that, wait a second, what am I talking about? You know, I'm doing all that with a computer over there, and I've got my little tablet right here. And I can just look up, because I want to give you the information, the proper information on where this talk was given. I did promise Adler that I was going to give the due credit to the church, which allowed her to do that talk. Okay. One second. Okay, let's see. I have to get used to the interfaces here, and I'm doing a search, and A-D-L-E-R, using her NPR address, of course. And let's see. Yes. Margot, yes, come hear my vampire sermon on October 21st. This was before the fact. So let me see. Okay. Yes, it was the Unitarian Church of All Souls, a very large Unitarian Universalist church on 80th Street in Lexington. Now, you see, I got it all wrong. I said it was on the Upper West Side, and Lexington, the last time, it's on the Upper West Side if you turn the map upside down. Otherwise, it's on the east side. So she gave the Sunday sermon, believe it or not, at the 10 a.m. and the 11:15 a.m. service. And the title of the sermon is Why We Love Vampires. And she also gives it the title Vampires, the Earth and Our Moral Struggles. And I'll tell you what she wrote in the email. She says, if you have been wondering what all this vampire stuff I have been involved in is about, when I took my 4-month leave from NPR, which is now over, so she's back on NPR. I mean, they wanted her back by election, believe me. And why I read 250 vampire novels over the last 3 years, here is the 20-minute version. So set your Wayback Machine for just last Sunday, And but before I put that on, I do wish to thank Rebecca, who pledged some money to WBAI, and you, who I am hoping are about to pledge to WBAI. And you can do that by giving us a call at 212-209-2950, 209-2950 at area code 212. I had to think, I was about to, you know, when I'm in pitching mode and I start just going on automatic, I started giving out some of our old phone numbers, and those numbers by now have been reassigned, and I don't necessarily want to wake people in the middle of the night. But again, I will ask you, where are you hearing? Whoa. Am I reading that number correctly? Kenita, is I it was 60 the last time I looked, which is nice. And now I'm seeing 260. And if that is correct, I am overjoyed. I am really happy, and I should stop talking and start delivering, as I've promised to do, because, well, this is cool stuff that you're about to hear, and fascinating stuff that I've dealt with Adler. And Margo will be on these airwaves talking about more of this in the future. We will make that happen, but I'm going to go and find out where that $200 came from. Thank you so much. And you should be listening to Margo's sermon from that church, I don't want to speak now, Google, go away. New interface is nice, but I'm still a little, the name of the church, yes, is the Unitarian Church of All Souls. Okay, so, as I said, set your Wayback Machine to last Sunday and enjoy Margo's sermon.
Vampires. I was never interested in vampires. If you asked me 5 years ago, I would have said, "Are you kidding?" I'd read maybe one vampire novel, not the 250 I have read now. I had seen one movie, The Hunger, probably because I knew the author. But going to a conference, I bought some trashy novels for the plane. I read the two Twilight novels, and it might have ended right there. But 8 days later, my husband was diagnosed with terminal stomach cancer. I started obsessing on vampire novels, sitting by his bedside while he slept, because I was thinking about mortality. My husband and partner of 33 years was dying, and he was someone who wanted to live forever. There was a definite tension between our views on death, a tension I didn't really understand until after he died. It's also a tension I realize now that exists in many of the most interesting vampire novels. My husband had what I would call the high-tech view of death. It was to be avoided at all costs. He was a runner. He was in perfect health. He took various supplements and antioxidants. He drank a glass of wine for resveratrol. He never smoked. He was fit. And unlike me, he never did any drugs in his youth. He thought he would live to be 100 or preferably even older. And a science journalist, he followed scientific discoveries and all the advances of aging research. And when he did die, he thought he might have his ashes flown up in space. His attitude was definitely rage, rage, rage against the dying of the light. I, at that same moment, had more of an earth-centered pagan perspective. We're all part of the life cycle. Like a seed, we are born, we sprout, we grow, we mature, we decay, we make room for future generations who, like seedlings, are reborn through us. As for the persistence of consciousness, deep down I thought, how can we know? Perhaps we simply return to the elements. We become earth and air and fire and water. That seemed okay to me. In fact, I remember reading in a book by the feminist author Barbara Walker that the ancient meaning of the four elements was the way we went to die. We were left for carrion in the air, we were buried in the earth, we were burned on the pyre, and we were buried in the depths of the sea. That also seemed all right. Although deep down, there was a part of me that was on my husband's wavelength and wanted to live forever. The vampire of myth and literature embodies some of that same tension my husband and I had regarding death. They have near immortality and yet are tragically frozen in time. They cannot grow and change like the seasons or, in most descriptions, birth new life. And yet they have superpowers and strength and often the wisdom that can come with extreme age, an often cynical, jaundiced view of life. Rosalie, who bemoans her frozen state in the Twilight novels, is asking the same question asked in books like Tuck Everlasting or Olaf Stapleton's famous science fiction novel from 1930, Last and First Men. Humans want to be part of nature, yet we still want to push the edge of the envelope, seeking to be more. Vampires let us play with death and the issue of mortality. They let us ponder what it would mean to be truly long-lived. They allow us to ask questions we usually bury except in science fiction. What does one value more and what does one value less with a short human life? Is the vampire's frozen life sterile? Does life only mean something when it's part of a cycle of birth, growth, decay, death, and the birth of new life? Is there a beauty that comes only from the cycles of the season which we are a part? So in the beginning, I pondered mortality, but I knew it didn't explain the millions of readers and movie viewers and television watchers who were devouring vampire stories. An article in The Hollywood Reporter a year or so ago said, vampires brought in $7 billion to the Hollywood economy in the last 2 years, the GDP of a small nation. 117 million Twilight books have been sold the last time I looked. And this is not just a teen phenomena. There are at least 30,000 adult women on a Twilight Moms website. New vampire novels continue to be constant bestsellers for adults and teens. And on television, there's The Vampire Diaries, True Blood, and both the American and British versions of Being Human. On a recent trip to Europe, I found that my Dutch teenage relatives in Amsterdam and the 20-year-olds at a conference I spoke to at Edinburgh were absolutely obsessed with The Vampire Diaries. I wanted to understand why vampires have such pull, such popularity, such traction in our culture, both in American and much European culture at this very moment in time. It's very easy to dismiss all this pop culture snidely and to say, for example, oh, it's all about teens and sex or even repressed sex. You've read the articles, how Twilight is all about abstinence from a Mormon point of view and Edward's a stalker. I don't believe it for a minute. We all now know that rape is not about sex. It's about power. I began to wonder if maybe the interest in vampires was really a meditation on power and its abuses. One of the reasons that vampires are interesting is that they, like we, are in conflict over issues of power. We want it, we distrust it, we get twisted by it, we abuse it, we love it, we hate it, we struggle with it. Almost every recent vampire novel, film, and television show confronts this issue. Amy Smith, a Quaker who teaches courses on the literature of war and also on vampire films and fiction at the University of the Pacific, puts it this way. The central question in so many of these films and novels is, if you had power over others, how would you use it? The tension is always between, we're at the top of the food chain, we can do what we want, humans are cattle, they're prey, versus, we were once human, how can we treat humans like cattle? This is the same tension, she says, that we have in life. If you earn more money than someone, if you have more power than someone, how will you use it? Does having more power or status give you the right to use it? Does might make right? It's really the same question, she says. Teens who naturally feel invisible and powerless, since they are still under the thumb of the twin authorities of school and parents, find the fantasy of difference, of special powers and abilities, intoxicating. Whether these powerful creatures are the X-Men, the beings of Pandora, or vampires, they identify with the struggle of wanting power, yet they often see its dangers with clearer eyes than their parents, because they are watching from the outside as the older generation abuses power, often wielding it over them, often seeing their rites of passage as criminal. In an extraordinary email I received from Anne Rice, the author who has sold millions of vampire novels, she said, "The vampire, the symbol of the outsider in all of us, is romanticized by teens because they so desperately need to find a noble path through the hideous passage that Western culture has set up for them." Hear that again. They so desperately need to find a noble path through the hideous passage that Western culture has set up for them. Reading that, I thought of the horrors of consumer culture they must navigate. I thought about high school. Think of the Cullens in Twilight doing high school over and over. Think about doing the senior prom 5 times. Now that's a horror story. And if we look at Buffy, the Vampire Slayer, it's all about power, women, power, and leadership. In the last season of Buffy, she's forced to renounce patriarchal power and give up her own power for the power of all women. There are hundreds of scholarly articles just about this. And of course, if we look further back, Voltaire, Engels, Marx, the people of Occupy Wall Street, all use the word vampire to describe issues of power, usually using the word for the powerful, the corrupt, the capitalist, the Wall Street trader. Most of the teen vampire stories are not only about power, they're really about choice and identity. Bella, at the end of the third Twilight movie, describes herself as an outsider who feels more at home in an inhuman world than a human one. "This is not about you," she says to Edward. "This is about me and my choices." But that still doesn't explain what's really going on now. Every age gets the vampire it needs, feminist author Nina Auerbach wrote in her book, Our Vampires Ourselves. Every age uses vampires to express their fears and concerns, writes Eric Newsom in his book, The Dead Travel Fast. In 1897, when Bram Stoker wrote Dracula, England had the largest ports in the world. There was fear of incoming disease, of foreigners, of immigration, and Stoker created the perfect monster, Eastern European, bringing dirt from a foreign land. You can do this for every period that has had a wave of interest in vampires. In the 1980s, with AIDS, for example, vampires were often described as parasites. You became infected by vampirism like a disease. And the first vampire novel, story rather, in the English language, was started in 1816 in the same chalet on the same weekend that Mary Shelley started to write Frankenstein. The fear at that time was science replacing God. So what's happening now? Who are the vampires we have created? And what are the fears and concerns they are expressing? Look at our modern vampires, most of those of the last 15 years. The Cullens in Twilight, Bill Compton and Eric Northman in True Blood, Mick St. John in that wonderful CBS one-season series Moonlight, Mitchell, the vampire in the BBC series Being Human, Henry Fitzroy in Blood Ties by Tanya Huff, Stefan and Damon in the television show The Vampire Diaries, and let's not forget Angel and Spike in Buffy. They all have something in common that makes them different than most vampires that went before. When I put their names in a line on a piece of paper, it was like a light bulb suddenly went off. Unlike the vampires that went before, they're all struggling desperately to be moral, despite being predators. Often failing, sometimes succeeding, but all engaged in a profound struggle to lead a moral life despite their need for blood. There's a wonderful scene in the presidential vampire thriller Blood Oath by Christopher Farnsworth, which came out a couple years ago. The idea is that President Andrew Johnson found a vampire on a ship and imprisoned him. He managed to get Marie Laveau, the voodoo queen of New Orleans, to bind him by a blood oath to serve every president of the United States. Nathaniel Cade, the vampire, is now in the modern world serving a president somewhat like Obama. In one scene, he stands in the back of an AA meeting. He does this pretty regularly because he sees himself as an addict. And while he only drinks animal blood, he still lusts for the blood of humans. We humans are addicts, not only in the obvious ways, abusing alcohol and cigarettes and drugs and food. We are clearly in a struggle with an addictive lifestyle. 8 U.S. presidents in a row have claimed they would bring about the end of our dependence on foreign oil, and they've meant it, just like a smoker means it when he insists he will quit. But our jobs, the economy, the way we live and commute, the way our infrastructure is set up, all compromise us. We depend, at least for now, on continuing an addictive relationship to fossil fuels. Oil is our blood, and our addiction compromises the earth. Vampires are exactly us right now, as we wage wars, use oil, and suck the lifeblood out of the planet. Whitley Strieber, author of The Hunger, goes even further. He says, our prey is the planet. If so, vampires are us, and the issue before us is how we can learn to use our formidable powers without destroying the world and future generations. Like vampires, we are in a struggle with our own predation. You may ask, when did we create this vampire that represents this moral struggle? At first I thought it was Buffy, and then I thought it went back to Anne Rice, but it really goes back 45 years to Dark Shadows and the vampire Barnabas. Dark Shadows started in 1966, but Barnabas didn't appear until well into 67, and the word vampire was never used until 68, and so I started thinking about those years. In 1966, Stuart Brand, the man who founded the Whole Earth Catalog, one of the most significant environmental journals, took an LSD trip on the rooftop of a San Francisco building. He was meditating on something Buckminster Fuller had once said, that the root of man's misbehavior was the notion that our Earth was flat and infinite. On LSD, he suddenly felt and saw the curve of the Earth. When he came down, he printed up a political button and sent a couple hundred all over the world, to NASA, to Soviet and U.S. diplomats, to members of the United Nations and members of Congress. The button had this sentence: why have we not yet seen a picture of the whole Earth? While there were a couple of fuzzy views from satellites, it would take Apollo 8 in 1968 to give us that color picture of the Earth rising. And 4 years later, another Apollo gave us the picture of the blue marble Earth, which may well be the most reproduced photograph in history. Those photographs changed us. At first we saw just no boundaries, and we are all brothers and sisters. But eventually, we understood the darker vision. We saw our vulnerabilities for the first time. We saw ourselves as compromised morally, standing on this fragile planet and not doing what we need to do to save her. 1970 was the first Earth Day, the real beginning of the environmental movement, as we suddenly saw the Earth's fragility, a tiny ball of brilliant color in a dark universe, a ball so small the astronauts could blot it out with their thumb. They all noted it, and we all changed. Our vampires changed at the same moment. This image changed us and our thinking. I think the vampires so many are identifying with allow us to look at ourselves more clearly, to see the compromises we make daily, the moral struggles we often lose or more commonly deny. Sylvia Plath wrote, "I'm terrified of this dark thing that lives in me." And Stephen Moore in The Vampire in Verse writes, "The reason you can't see a vampire in the mirror, the vampire is a mirror, reflecting our secret self." Hopefully, these morally conflicted vampires will allow us not only to see our abuses of power more clearly, but give us a few insights on how we can struggle to live more morally on this earth. And now, when someone says to me, How could you waste 3 years reading vampire novels? I paraphrase something that the late great science fiction writer Philip K. Dick once said, that when the divine is exiled from much of our culture, sometimes you have to look for it in the trash. Blessed be.
Harris, 1921, Jazz Vampire. I love that song. I play it all the time, and you can hear why. And before that, Margot Adler's sermon on why we love vampires. And you see, it wasn't just the pop culture thing that you probably thought it was going to be. Well, that's Adler. I am enamored of this woman's amazing intellect and so grateful that she started Hour of the Wolf so that I could take it over. She started the show in 1972. I was her engineer. It was on 5 days a week, and I took the program over in the summer of 74, we figured out. And you know, the way that she got into the vampire thing, the thing with her husband John's cancer was quite something. He was a person who was on our air. We've lost a few people to these horrible things. All too recently, Danny Lieberman, who was a friend of WBAI's, I think he's a friend of everybody. I think more people knew him than people know Kevin Bacon, okay? And he passed away of leukemia last Friday. And yes, Margot knew him. And that was an awful thing. I held a party last year at my house, and among the first people that arrived were like these four cancer survivors, including Margot. And I just, you know, looked at them. I was cooking at the time, and I looked at them, and I thought, oh my God. And I'm so sorry that we had lost one of them. And it's worth mentioning Danny's passing on the air. He was probably a friend of more than one person listening, and certainly he was a friend to the radio station itself. So thank you. So Margot's lecture that you just heard was a sermon last Sunday at the Unitarian Church of All Souls. And if that's what their idea of a Sunday sermon is, well, then I want to know more. Well, we've actually raised a little bit of money. I said we would, and I'm very, very grateful. One person in Brooklyn donated $60 to get that Ray Bradbury double CD of all those radio dramas, and Rebecca from New Jersey gave us some money. And there was a gentleman from Long Island that donated $200, and boy, is that nice. And he said, he told I think it was Michael who was answering the phone, that he heard me somewhere in 1985. I wouldn't have remembered the year, but he said it was 1985 while I was on the air, and there was an earthquake while I was on the air, and wondered if I remembered. It's like, well, yeah. You sort of remember when you're on the radio and there's an earthquake while you're on the air. One remembers that. Right now, what we're looking for is not an earthquake, but perhaps a tsunami of phone calls pledging. That would be nice. That would be nice. We're not going to go into hard pitching at this point, being 1:54 in the morning. We're going to continue our Samhain celebration for the most part. But I am nevertheless not going to give up on the idea that, that listener-sponsored radio is here for you, and hopefully you are here for us, and will donate money to keep WBAI listener-sponsored radio on the air, and show in this time slot, which is the current Hour of the Wolf time slot, even though the Hour of the Wolf is the morning dawn, by the way, for those who don't know that. Maybe that's what I should start the next segment with, is the definition of Hour of the Wolf. I think I've got that somewhere. Yes, there it is. And I'll start off the next music set with that. But it's actually a trailer for the movie. Margot named the radio show Hour of the Wolf after the movie by Ingmar Bergman. I think it's a 1967 movie. So we'll do that because that's definitely fitting for the season. We're going to do another Samhain show next week, even though at that point it will technically be All Souls Day. It will be November 1st because I go on the air at 1:30 in the morning. And that will actually be, I'm sorry to say, a pre-recorded show. I'm a great believer in doing, well, freeform live radio, freeform and live. But I am going to be heading at that point for the World Fantasy Convention in Toronto, and hope to do a lot of interviews there with a lot of people. I'm concentrating on people from different parts of the world. Already got Jack Dan from Australia. I have to contact Karen Lord, who I had on the program once before from Barbados. She is an amazing writer. And there are going to be a lot of amazing writers and readings there, and I'll be running around collecting sound for you to all hear and to enjoy some of it being didactic, all of it hopefully being entertaining. And again, the thing that I keep stressing is, where else in the world can you hear this kind of radio? It's not that I'm just saying, hey, what I'm doing is great. What I am saying is what I am doing here is unique. And it only exists thanks to listener-sponsored radio. And if you know any other show that is in any way similar to this one on the radio, I'll guarantee you that's a listener-sponsored station. And that's why you need to pledge. Because listener-sponsored radio, without listeners sponsoring them, stop existing. So that's why we need your help so much. 212-209-2950. $25 makes you a subscriber to WBAI. One person called with a modest pledge of $10, and I am no less grateful for that. That's a call. That's a show of support. It makes me feel good, and it helps the radio station in the long run. Somebody called with $200. The person called with $60, by the way, will be getting. We have a very, very cool premium that we've been pushing for a little while since Ray Bradbury turned 90 years old and then passed away a year later. Max Schmid has put together two CDs of over 40 hours of radio dramas based on Ray Bradbury stories, including an entire sound telling, audio telling of the Martian Chronicles and other pieces, including an interview that I did with Bradbury when he was in New York, receiving the National Book Award for having written Fahrenheit 451 on the 40th anniversary of that occasion. And if I say so, I listened to that when we played it last Fun Drive, and I thought, gee, that was one of my better interviews. I wasn't just chatting with the person. We had good questions, and he was so much fun and so fascinating. A great person, and we're so much richer for that. And for a $60 pledge, you can get that interview and all this other stuff that Max has put together. Well worth it. Well worth it. And we and if I just name the people that were on the show between the last Fun Drive and this Fun Drive, we've had Harlan Ellison, we've had Michael Bishop, we've had Connie Willis, we've had Mary Robinette Kowal. Some of these names you definitely know. Some of these names you will not know. Norman Spinrad was on the show. And if you don't know them, well, then you become hopefully that much richer for having heard them. And if you do know them, well, yeah, certainly, you know, somebody as world famous as Harlan Ellison and as controversial as Harlan is, well, hopefully we've added to bringing you up to date, because he hasn't been doing a whole lot of interviews lately. It is, by the way, 2:00 here in New York City, and this is WBAI. In that town, New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and over WBAI.org. And we are doing our Samhain Spectacular. And Samhain, for those, it's not phonetic. It's, I believe, of Welsh origin, and it's certainly Celtic, but I believe it's the Welsh version of that. So maybe it's got too many vowels for Welsh, come to think of it. I should look it up and tell you about that. But I can tell you that it's spelled Samhain, but it's pronounced Samhain, and it is the festival where the harvest, we're getting the last of the harvest, where you pick up them veggies and the things that are growing in the ground, and the winter is going to be covered with snow. The earth will be covered with snow, and so the earth dies, and the great cycle continues. And on that day of Samhain are the days when one can relate to the spirits of the earth and the people who have passed, the people who are dead. And that holiday is the original holiday that spawned All Hallows Eve and All Souls Day and all the variants upon that. And on the phone, a listener called and asked me exactly, you know, why want, you know, where the tradition of trick-or-treating came from. And that I don't know the exact answer to. Okay, somebody's calling. They probably know more than I do on this topic. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so you're an expert on this.
Irish.
Oh, it's Irish.
Yes.
Not Welsh.
Yeah,
but yeah, it is Celtic, right?
Yes, oh, yes. And it's interesting. All of the Celtic cultures, whether it's Manx or Scots Gaelic or Irish or Welsh or Breton or even Cornish, have a particular word. Yeah, you're right. Too many vowels. The Welsh would be S-M-H-Y-Y-W.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You know that. And no, the Irish have a Celtic calendar. It's easy to follow because there are four holidays. There's, of course, Celtic New Year, which is Samhain. There's Imbolc, which is lambing, February 1st or 2nd, depending upon where you're looking at it. There's Beltane, May Day.
Beltane, you say, not Beltane?
Yeah, well, I've heard both.
Okay.
There are Irish musicians who swear it's Beltane, May Day.
Yeah, well, that's probably a regional difference,
yeah.
But that's May Day.
And then there's Lunasa.
Say it again?
Lunasa, L-U-G-N-A-S-A-D.
Oh, right.
August 1st, Lammas in England. Now, it's interesting. There's a novel, actually, I believe, by Evangeline Walton called Lammas.
Yes, there is.
And there's, but that's August 1st. So those are the four Celtic calendars. And it's interesting that if you look at the chronicles, the Celtic year, especially the Irish, was divided really into two parts. From Samhain to Beltane was considered the indoors. That's when the heroes, the Finn McCools and all the others, they came in off the land, and they wenched and they drank and they sang and they feasted and story told for 6 months in the hall. Then as of May Day, they went out and they lived off the land. They foraged as good.
Well, that sounds Nordic, doesn't it?
No, it's Celtic. And, well, it could be Nordic, too, except that...
because if you're going to spend all that time indoors, it's cold.
Oh, well, that's true. I mean, well...
And that's where the Yule log comes from.
Ah, yes. By the way, I need to ask you one question. In that trilogy of Tamlins, who was the first one?
Bill Jones. Is she wonderful or what?
Yeah, well, where did you discover her? I have to say this about this.
I just did a search on versions of Tamlin, and that has become my favorite version.
The melody is just amazing.
She is so haunting.
It really is. It reminds me very much, I'm making an analogy here, of... the wonderful version that you play of the Highwaymen. Oh, the Canadian singer.
Lorena McKennitt.
Lorena McKennitt, yes.
Yeah.